I'm Chris Hall, and you're listening to The House on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius XM. You can also catch the show by using the CBC Listen app or subscribe to our podcast. Those are sounds from a demonstration last weekend in Montreal, where several thousand people gathered to protest against mandatory mask rules. Those in attendance listened as speakers railed against vaccines or promoted conspiracy theories. As disinformation campaigns expand and the quality of their messaging improves, what can governments do to convince reluctant Canadians to take steps to protect themselves and their children from illnesses such as COVID-19? Maya Goldenberg is a philosophy professor at the University of Guelph, whose research focuses on why some parents reject vaccines and the medical evidence behind them. And she joins me now. Welcome to the House.
Thank you.
All right, so why do some people resist medical advice about the importance of vaccines or to question how serious or even how virulent the coronavirus is?
Those kinds of objections seem to stem from a point of mistrust in the government and scientific institutions that are tasked with directing our healthcare choices. It's usually got more to do with how the messaging fits with their views of the world, how it fits with their relationship with the government and with the general system. It's got less to do with how much they understand the science. There is that tendency to focus on the science and say the problem must be scientific illiteracy, but there actually is very little evidence that that is the problem. That's not really what motivates people to resist scientific advice.
All right, so if they distrust the professionals, why are they willing then to go online and believe what they see and read there?
Precisely because people need advice. So the question needs to be, why do people look for alternative sources of advice? Why wouldn't you just visit the Public Health Agency of Canada website, read what you need to read, and stop there? Many of us do that. There is a cluster of people, they are vocal, but they are still fairly small in comparison, that don't trust those sources of information. They believe that our systems of health governance and scientific governance have been corrupted, let's say, by corporate influence. And because of that, you need to be looking elsewhere. That's when you go online.
Right. And does that make them more susceptible to the conspiracy theories?
Of course, because when you start looking for alternative information, you will find it. There's no shortage of alternative theories out there. And you find people who think like you and approach the issue similarly to you. And then that tends to amplify the message. People talk about echo chambers on the internet. When you meet people who think like you, there's a tendency to talk to each other and to actually intensify those views. So you might come in a little reluctant about vaccines, but by the time you leave, you're very reluctant about vaccines.
I know most of your research has focused on people who are opposed to vaccines or worried about vaccines. Is there an overlap between those people who are against vaccines and those who don't want to wear a mask?
There seems to be. There was some reporting recently by the CBC that a Canadian anti-mask group had made relationships with an anti-vaccine group and was learning from them how to promote and amplify their message. And the reason you would do that is, well, first of all, the anti-vaccine groups are more established. Anti-masking is obviously very new just because of our time frame. And they have similar interests. They want to point to the weaknesses in the mainstream message in order to create that kind of doubt that might make people look at their own alternative take on things. So even before I'd heard about this connection between anti-mask and anti-vaccine, I'd noticed that the tactics seem to be very similar. And it turns out it's because they were learning from each other.
You know, I think it's no surprise now to most Canadians that the number of cases are going up, particularly in Ontario, British Columbia. And I'm wondering, even though you mentioned that these groups might be relatively small and new, is what kind of threat could they pose to public health?
The threat is because public health needs a lot of buy-in for these kinds of mandates. The mask mandates, the future vaccines, they don't work unless most of the people are doing it. So raising these kinds of concerns, I mean, in some ways it's healthy to raise concerns. We live in a free society, but it can also distract from the good that comes from these kinds of social initiatives. We need people to work together, and instead these kind of messages are creating distrust and division. Okay. You know, it's right at a time when we need a lot of unity, not disunity.
With that in mind, what can governments do then to promote trust in public health officials?
Right now, our health officials actually do have a lot of public trust, so that's a good thing. We need to keep that going. It's been noticed since the start of COVID that public trust in scientists, in public health, and in government have all gone up. So how did that happen? Well, one is that we started seeing a lot more of our public health officers. Prior to COVID, most people could not name the provincial medical officer or the provincial's public health officer. And now we know all of them by name. We know Williams and Henry and Hinshaw and, of course, Teresa Tam. So putting them out to the public is a good way of generating trust. Of course, they need to do it well. There have been missteps along the way where it seems like the message was backfired a little bit. As for what do you do about the misinformation, it's okay to try to debunk those messages. There's a lot of people online that debunk myths about vaccines, about masks, that kind of thing. But you need to do that carefully, because by pointing to the misinformation, there's the risk of actually helping amplifying the message.
I just want to pick up on that, because I know when Teresa Tam, who is Canada's chief public health officer, she first said that masks might not be necessary to be worn, that, and then changed later on and said that, yes, they are an incredibly important tool in slowing the spread of COVID-19. So what happens if the message isn't consistent? And certainly people who listen to Donald Trump, the president south of the border, sort of saying it's going to disappear, what impact does that have?
Well, the messages are going to change. So part of the communication should be admitting that the science is very new and we're still learning new things about the virus, about how to control the virus along the way. So the messages will change, and it's actually a good sign when scientists can adjust their messaging based on new evidence. At the same time, you need to be very clear about how it's changing and why it's changing. Dr. Tam was maybe a little bit conservative on masks at the time when she was recommending not to use it. There wasn't a lot of evidence about how masks work in a community setting, just because we haven't done this kind of thing before. But there was evidence about it, how it works in healthcare settings, and we have a long history of masking during outbreaks. So I think maybe she could have been a little stronger on masks, precisely because when she did have to change course on that, it was hard to shift the public in that direction.
Let me ask you one last question. And if, as you look ahead, you know, schools are reopening and university students are back, and I'm wondering if you're concerned that distrust or the mistrust of the messaging is going to get worse over time, or if it's possible to actually, as you look at your research, whether you think it's actually possible to do the better job of communicating people to have better buy-in.
I think of either thing can happen. Right now I'm looking where I live in Ontario, there's a lot of concern around the schools reopening. Parents are really nervous. So this is a time where more communication and assurances that this will be handled well and that we will be able to respond to the challenges that come up are needed. Otherwise, parents can get frustrated and start finding the sort of alternative theories and online misinformation more compelling. So you need to keep those relationships between scientific and government institutions and the public very strong, especially during difficult times like sending our children back to school.
All right. Maya Goldenberg, really appreciate your insights this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Maya Goldenberg is a philosophy professor at the University of Guelph. Her forthcoming book is called Vaccine Hesitancy, Public Trust, Expertise, and the War on Science. It's out next year. And that's it for us this week. Our crew on the house is Raisa Patel, Christian Paz Lang, Emma Godmere, and Kristen Nelson. Technical production by Conrad Hijazi. I'm Chris Hall. Thanks for listening. And COVID-19 cases are creeping up in many parts of the country. Don't forget to continue following public health guidelines, and don't let your guard down. Don't let your guard down.